Welcome to the Casa de Confidence podcast, a podcast for women about going in a direction of their dreams and the confidence it takes to reach them. I'm your host, Julie DeLuca Collins. I am a dreamer, a traveler, visionary, risk taker. I am a lover of books, activist, philanthropist, and most of all, a supporter of women in their dreams. If you stumble into our casa for the first time, welcome. If you've been here before, I'm so glad you're back. Grab your drink of choice, settle in, and make yourself at home.
Hi, Julie. How are you?
Good morning, Daniel Collins.
Good morning.
It's actually afternoon.
It is?
Yes, it is.
In the mysterious world of audio recording, though, it can be any time.
It could be the middle of the night. Why not?
Could be, except this car is driving by the house, annoying me and freaking me out that they're making noise on the audio since I'm the audio guy.
So, here's the thing. Did you ever think that it would not be a good idea to live in a busy road when you bought this house?
Bought this house a long time ago, a lifetime
Pre-me. That's right. In a previous life, you bought this house.
Yeah, that's true. But this road was not this busy when I bought this house. And the increased traffic did not help the property values. They didn't hurt it, but they didn't help it.
Here's the thing. I love this house. It's home to me. It is the one home where I think that I can say I have lived in the longest.
Mm. And the funny thing is, anytime I show you a house, hey, this will be nice and quiet. You're like, well, I can't live out here in the country.
No. You know, when I first moved here and we got married, I had a hard time falling asleep because it was very quiet
for me.
It was too quiet for me.
Anyway.
Yeah. But there's a certain thing about this house. Like, it is not an open concept. And I like having people and entertaining. And I have definitely created a flow for when I entertain. You know when we used to entertain people? Back in those days when we could go over each other's houses. Yeah, my house is not conducive for COVID entertaining because we're very blocked in. But I love like how our house has different rooms. And now we have the send in that is finished.
Mm-hmm.
And I am going to suck the life out of using that room. It might be snowing out there and I will be out there.
You're going to have a jacket on.
Yeah, I'm going to be fully clothed with 10 blankets and a heater. But I want to get as much use as that room because it's lovely. It's lovely in the mornings. You know, when I've been doing my mindfulness, and in the mornings, I run a group of anyone who wants to practice mindfulness and wants to learn more about meditating and being mindful. I'm doing a group in the morning at 6:30 a.m., and it is lovely because the sun starts to rise and it's coming over the trees, so it's a perfect room.
Oh, I thought it was a perfect, lovely room because you were in it.
It always is a lovely, perfect room when you're in it, too. Oh, we're dumbasses.
So, Julie, what are you drinking today?
I'm drinking water. I'm trying to hydrate. Although, I did get something in the mail, and this is not an ad. But because I've been having difficulties and challenges sleeping, despite the melatonin and despite the magnesium that I take, I decided to level up. And I did not, I did level up a couple nights to NyQuil because I needed some good night's sleep. But I have been having my own personal midnight summer night dreams.
What are you, writing Shakespeare in your sleep?
No, I think I am of a certain age, which means that it gets really, really warm in the middle of the night.
Anyhow. You'll save every one of us? Oh, I'm singing again. Sorry.
You're singing again. But anyhow, so I think my hormones and, you know, not to get personal, but I did have a hysterectomy last, what was it? It's going to be 2 years in December, Dan.
Yeah.
Can you believe? Anyhow, so I didn't think I would have to deal with this whole shit show, but I am. I'm a girl. I'm a woman of a certain age. And anyhow, I got this thing. It's called Moon Balance. And you know I'm into the moon, so they had me at the name. But it's natural, and it has tons of different ingredients that help to sort of naturally regulate you. So I'm going to try. I tried it out. I slept well one night with it. I'm going to continue to try it and stay tuned. And perhaps this could be an ad.
Perhaps.
You know.
Anyway, Julie.
Anyhow, what's up, my love?
Who is our guest today?
Our guest today is the fabulous Kristen Noel.
Ooh.
And Kristen Noel, I had such a fun conversation with her. And listen, I've yet to speak to someone I don't love, but Kristen Noel was really intriguing. She was in a Peace Corps and realized that women struggle with money and wanted to really be able to take her expertise and help women be able to have a different mindset toward money and become the best of themselves when they're doing their side hustle or full-time hustle, but really be able to confidently handle and manage money and create abundance.
You know, I got to say, not only women, but men. It's the one thing we don't come out of grade school with the skills to do, and that's to handle our money all the time. Like, I went to a tech school where I learned a trade, right? I came out learning a trade. So I came out with the skills to earn money, but we never talked about how to keep your money.
You know, I actually spoke to someone this week who is a middle school teacher, and he, and this is not an ad, but if you are looking because you are a teacher and you don't know how to take your lessons online, I'm going to introduce you to this guy. He is fantastic. But anyway, one of the things that he also does is he does courses on teaching middle school students money management.
That's great, because I mean, that's some of the skills that we don't come out of school with. I know our generation didn't. And I don't know, maybe they're teaching that in this generation a little bit.
They're starting to, but it's not something necessarily that the schools are focusing on. And the schools are focusing on a lot these days.
Yeah. So it's great that she's helping to educate women on this. Not only keeping her money, but I mean, she's talks to people about their hustles. I mean, if they have a side thing they want to do, she helps them focus on that, right?
Yes. And one of the things that she is also certified in Chinese metaphysics, which I am in here for. So if you don't know what Chinese metaphysics is, it's feng shui. And speaking of decorating.
Wait a minute. As a previous philosophy major in college, I always love the one time a day that I get to say something like metaphysics because...
Well, that was
Good to say metaphysics.
Good job. You said it twice now.
We're going to get metaphysical, baby.
Oh, boy. Okay. So I tried to ask her some questions about feng shui because, as you may or may not know, the door in our house is red. Because in feng shui principles, I have heard that your house should be facing south, which ours is, which I really like that, and that your door should be painted red, which ours is. Now, in feng shui metaphysics, one of the things that I heard is that if your stairs are in front of your door, then it means that your money leaves you. So
we need to move that staircase.
Well, that's why you paint the door red to prevent your money. And you also have a mirror above the stairs. And did you know that there's a mirror above our stairs?
Well, did you do that on purpose?
Of course I did that on purpose. You think I do anything just nilly-willy? And then you wonder why I made you paint the door red. Then you're like, oh, why do I have to have this mirror here?
New York red rose. You like red. Red's your color.
I love red. So, although I'm not wearing red. I'm wearing blue.
We're wearing blue.
We're matching.
Anyway, Julie,
Yes, Daniel.
I think it's time for our guest,
Kristen Noel.
Thank you for joining me. I'm thrilled that you were here. I've been looking so forward to speaking to you again. I love getting to know you during our first conversation. So, Ms. Kristen Noel, why don't you take a moment and welcome to Casa de Confidence and, you know, introduce yourself.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so excited. Same here. I've been really looking forward to this interview, especially since we connected so well during our first meeting. So I'm excited to talk all things confidence and business and all that stuff. So quick introduction. My name is Kristen Noel. I am a transformational mindset and business coach. So I really focus on helping my clients get rid of their money blocks, or not necessarily get rid of them, but step into the best version of themselves by eliminating their top money block so that they can really stop self-sabotaging and really start using their marketing strategies in the best way and really show up with confidence. So that's primarily what I do. I just became a best-selling author, so that's exciting. Yes. We can talk about that as well.
I'm thrilled for you. I think that's so exciting. And I one of the reasons that I love to have this conversation with you specifically, because you talk about money blocks and you talk about something that I feel a lot of women tend to stay away from the conversation and tend to not want to even open up about their worries or their shame. And I know that for myself, I wasn't a good money manager at points in my life. And now I'm in a really good place. And it really is because I stopped, you know, feeling shame, right? And thinking, oh, you know, and really creating some habits and creating some accountability to myself, to my marriage, and overall changing my mindset as well, and knowing that money was not an enemy, but money was something to be embraced, and that there is abundance for us as long as we're willing to take a look at what it is, right? How did you get into this work?
Oh, wow. So it was definitely not like a linear thing. I didn't just jump right into it. You know, I think a lot of it was born from my challenges growing up with the idea of money, because, you know, I grew up with Chinese immigrants. So both my parents immigrated from Hong Kong. And so growing up, you know, I really struggled with the idea of money. My father grew up in South Central LA. And so, you know, he grew up with a lot of fear. And so he passed down a lot of that fear to me. And again, without him intending to, right? It was just his upbringing. And I think, like, I talk a lot about this too, is that, you know, we subconsciously kind of hold on to a lot of the stories that our parents, you know, share with us or whatnot. And so growing up, it was really confusing because my dad, you know, grew up really poor, grew up with a lot of fear. Whereas my mom, she actually immigrated here when she was 25 by herself. And she really adopted this belief of taking risk. And so she actually grew up in a more wealthier family in Hong Kong. And my grandmother was really into real estate and real estate development and all that stuff. And so as a child, it was confusing, right? It was kind of like the rich dad, poor dad. It was in my household, literally. But what was interesting was that because my mom didn't, I didn't see my mom actually go to a job. So, you know, back then, like as a child, I was really soaking in this concept of like making money must mean that you must have a job, right? You must have a 9-to-5 job. You must be going somewhere and coming back, and basically there's food on the table. And because I saw my dad do that, I took a lot of financial advice from him because that's all I saw.
Right.
Whereas with my mom, she was at the time actually doing a lot of, you know, stock trading. She was doing a lot of that stuff and didn't really share that with us. And because she was a woman, I think she really battled with this idea of like wanting my dad to be the breadwinner and kind of shining light on him. And so that really affected my childhood because I really just thought that my mom was talking a lot of woo-woo because she taught me Chinese metaphysics and feng shui since I was a little girl, and just looked at her more as like the mom that stayed home and didn't really like know what she was talking about when it came to finances. And then my dad as like the breadwinner, and he was like, knew what he was talking about with money. So basically, you know, to make a long story short, I just didn't have a great relationship with money growing up. And it wasn't it was because of my struggle that made me realize that when I started my own business, my top thing that was keeping me and preventing me from success was not necessarily the strategy per se, but it was my money blocks. It was my idea of selling. It was my idea of money that really stopped me from, you know, going out there and fully, you know, living into the role that I was playing and the coaching and the experiences that I was giving to people.
I totally agree with you. I think that, and you know, I identify with the story so much as well, because my mom very similarly grew up in a very affluent family in El Salvador, and money was sort of that topic that, like politics and religion, you didn't really speak about, right? It was something sort of very taboo. But my grandmother was very independent. She, I remember from an early age, she was her own business owner, and she was a pillar in the community. She also came from an affluent family, as opposed to my great, my grandfather, my mom's dad. And, but she had her own checkbook. She, I remember that she sometimes, my grandfather would write her a check on a weekly basis for groceries and for expenses, because my grandmother, knew the importance that it was for a man to feel that he was the breadwinner. And I learned that from a very early age. Now, with my dad, my parents divorced when I was five. And my mom, and even to this day, right, she will tell you that she didn't really learn how to be a good money manager. Although her parents were, she grew up with a lot of privileges given to her, but never really learned. So all of that, when I, from an early age, I think I was 12 when I decided I need money. Like, I need to get a job. I need to, and I started doing my little side hustle here and there. But ultimately, I think that we definitely learn from our parents. And the reality is that we have to be able to talk about things that that can provide us abundance, but we don't. And it's all of our mindsets. It is all in how we choose to view it, for sure.
Oh, for sure. 100%. I mean, I believe, like, in obviously in the earlier age, like your only role models are your parents, right? Or your community or what you're surrounding yourself with. Mm-hmm. And then later on, when you grow up and like you go to college, or even if you don't go to college, then it's kind of like who you're surrounding yourself with. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely agree. I think that money is, that's also why I feel like I love like talking about this topic, because everyone's story is so different. Right. And therefore, because everyone's story is so different, their viewpoint of money is so different. And that's why it can be so challenging to kind of get over that fear of not having enough, because we've been just so programmed to think that there is not enough.
Right. And I think that in looking at, for instance, in a pivot in my career, a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, what would you be doing something coaching? And isn't there a lot of coaches out there? And it goes back to the mentality of scarcity, that there is such a misconception that there is not enough in the world for everyone. And I think that if we just open up to the possibility that you have something unique, no matter what you do, that it's always going to be a demand from somebody else, and a need and a value, and you need to look at the different value that you bring. And there's abundance as long as you're looking for the abundance and not looking at the scarcity of it.
So. Yeah, exactly. I think that when, especially when people are first starting out, there is that fear, right? Mm-hmm. There's not enough, like there's so much competition.
Yeah, of course.
There's a very red ocean. But when you start to really look within and start to really recognize your own gifts, you'll realize that you're always going to attract people that are just right for you if you just simply allow that, right? Mm-hmm. It's the pushing, it's the anxiety that causes us to doubt that. And that's why I love this work and I love talking about this, because that's the number one struggle that I feel like, especially women, deal with.
Mm-hmm. Who typically is a woman that you work with? Tell me about the type of client that you work with.
I love that question, because I literally just recently realized that I actually hit three types of women,
okay,
or that women can be all all three, basically. Mm-hmm. So I normally attract the type of women that is the entrepreneur or the wantrepreneur, the person that's mm-hmm. really early on in their business. Mm-hmm. And they're also like addicted to the struggle and the hustle, but they know there's an inkling that they don't want to live that life anymore.
Yes. Right?
So there's that type of woman. I also attract people that are really interested in spirituality and like the woo-woo and the law of attraction. Mm-hmm. So there's that type of woman. And then the last type of woman that I attract is the woman that is the woman of color, or the woman that doesn't feel like her voice is heard based off of like how they grew up, or like maybe like, for example, like Asian women mm-hmm. or Black women, or like Hispanic women, women that just feel like all throughout their life, they haven't been really recognized for who they really are because mm-hmm. of how they were, you know, brought up and their environment. So it's funny because I love that question so much. And what's interesting is that lately I've been actually attracting a lot of men as well. Men that are really into
interesting.
Yes. Really into just like meditation and really into just like not no longer hustling, because I feel like men have that mentality of like do,
right, get the hustle in.
Exactly. But what's interesting is our world is actually becoming more yin. It's becoming more feminine. And I think that more men are starting to recognize that. So to put it in a nutshell, those are the three types of, you know,
I love that.
Well, that I normally attract.
I think that I love the comment that you just made that our world is becoming more feminine. But I think that in essence, you what I view, and I agree with that comment, is because we need to sort of be nurturing to each other in this time. We need 100%. To really be able to watch and take care of ourselves and take care of each other, because we realize that things are fragile, right? And life is fragile, and it always has been, but I think that there's more of an awareness of that now from so many people. So, awesome. I love it. Now, what do you think are some of the challenges from your early life that you learned from that created you and put you in the path that you are now?
Yeah. So, I think last time we spoke, I briefly mentioned that I was a Peace Corps volunteer. So right after college, I applied and I lived in Armenia for 3 years. And I would definitely say that was like the pivotal moment that I realized that, number one, I was best at consulting people, coaching people. And number two, I really understood how important money can be when it comes to empowering women. And the reason why I say that was because I was placed in a woman's center, and my job was to help them sell their products so that they could be financially equipped to pay for basic things for their children, right? And when you're living in like a third world country or a developing country, and you see how important it is for women to be empowered, I think it really changes you. It was very challenging in the sense that I really had to step into their shoes, right? Because I was from the US, and in a sense I was very privileged, right? Like it's not like I grew up the way they grew up and, you know, saw the things that they saw. So I think the very first thing that I dealt with was understanding how do I put myself in other people's shoes and coach them in that light, right? Because I couldn't come in as a foreigner and like tell people like, this is what you need to do. And basically like try to change them in that way. In order for me to properly lead is to actually step into their shoes, understand them first, and then kind of see how I could empower them, right? It's not even about directing people, but empowering them. And I think through that experience, that was when it hit me that I have such a strong passion in helping all women from all walks of life, especially, you know, women that feel like they've been, you know, stuck, or women that feel like they've been trapped in their own stories, to be financially empowered so that they can actually help and impact even the masses. Really.
I love, again, the concept of you had to get into their own shoes. And I'm so glad you shared the story of you being in the Peace Corps, because I think that not everyone will have an opportunity, right, to see that how other people around the world really live. And I know for myself, I've been fortunate enough. Obviously, my mom's family is from El Salvador. I visited Latin America many times. I've been to several countries, and really,
I think it when we I went to Haiti to do a mission trip, and I was with a group of women, and one of them, you know, would consider herself to be not, you know, not upper middle class, but middle class, and she realized that after seeing how other people live, that the fact that we can go to our refrigerator and open the refrigerator, it may not be fully stocked, but there's some food, right? Or that you don't have to go outside from your one-room shack to cook on the outdoors. Just very extreme circumstances that little things we take for granted are privilege. And 100%. It's so key to make us appreciate more what we have, even when we don't think it's a lot. And as soon as we begin to appreciate that more, we can be more content and happy and find the abundance in the everyday. I also love the idea that you've been working, you saw that you needed to definitely serve them as opposed to right off the bat say, hey, I'm a know-it-all American that can teach you how to do it, right?
Right. And that's with anything. It's not just right. Like in that situation, because when you come into a room and try to like demand change, I feel like people can only lead by example. That's the best type of leadership I see out there, because even in our own homes, right? Like, I don't know about you and your partner or your husband, but like, if you were to like, just tell him what to do, like, or nag him, like that's not going to change. Right.
That doesn't fly at all in this house. It goes both ways. Right. I think that the one thing in actually my friend Dawn, who is episode 2, I believe, of the podcast, she and I go way back, and we talked about the concept of servant leadership and how serving is the most important thing that a leader can do. And I know that throughout my career as well, that any circumstance that I've come in that I'm placed in a position of leadership, the first thing to do is to really be able to listen and to find out what are the people that you're leading, quote unquote, need. What are their basic desires and wants, and how can you support them, as opposed to immediately being autocratic and saying, do it this way, do it this way. And that's sometimes what I see that this world sometimes needs a little less of, right? The people telling you what great leaders they are, and yet, you know, don't tell me how great you are. Tell me how good of a listener you are. Show me.
Exactly.
Show me. So that's important. Now, do you struggle with confidence?
I would say definitely in the beginning. And even sometimes too, I feel like confidence is a building block, right? Like I feel like confidence is not just something that you are born with per se.
Right.
Right? It's not something that, like, you know, you just come out of your mother's womb and you're like confident, right?
Hello, here I am, world.
Well, that's the thing too, is I sometimes feel like based off of personality, like I remember as a child having friends that were much more louder than me, much more confident, but in a way, like you just never really know. And so for me, I feel like I had to develop my confidence, right? And I had to really, really practice it in order for me to be where I am today.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely a good practice. Confidence is not something, and there's days that I wake up and I think I've got it together and I know I have it together. And there are some days that I wake up and I think, oh my gosh, what's wrong here, right? Like, I think I need some. Right. We were laughing with my husband because in the last episode of the podcast that dropped last week, we were doing the intro to the podcast, and he started the recording, and I'm putting lip gloss on. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I need a little pep in my step. And, you know, he's like, I don't understand. No one can see you. I'm like, I can see myself. Right. I need. So, and I think that little things like this, right, that just give a little hump to your step by something that makes you feel good, and it's important. Yes. And it builds who you are, your motivation and your confidence go hand in hand for sure.
Exactly.
And that's a building block for sure.
I love that you mentioned that, because I feel like it kind of reminds me of one of my clients, right? Because like one of my clients, and sorry if I'm going off in a little bit of
tangent, not at all. This is your show. You're supposed to talk about anything you want. I just lead the questions.
So one of my clients, she's actually a microblade artist. So I've been helping her really expand her business for the past half a year now. It's been really, like, she's been really growing. And one of the things that she really was struggling in the beginning was that she wasn't realizing that she was selling confidence, right? Because when you get your eyebrows done, you feel confident. You can show up powerfully, right? Kind of like what you said with the lipstick. So it goes back to say that, like, you know, sometimes we are not aware of it, but we're actually changing the world much more than we think we are, right? Because whenever we would do our coaching sessions, she's like, well, I'm just like selling like a microblade artist service, right? Like it's like a, it's a service. It has nothing, it's not really something special. And I'm like, you're not realizing that like it's the way you spin it. It's the way you look at it. That's, you know, that's what's the real thing. And so I love that you mentioned the lip gloss thing, because I do the same thing too.
Right? Oh yeah.
Like I use my eyelash curler because I'm like really into eyelashes, and that gives me that confidence.
Yep.
So
I actually yesterday I had to do a webinar for this large, the United Way that I volunteer with a lot. We typically do a huge event. It's our signature event. We raise hundreds of thousands of dollars for families that are we call them ALICE families, that are ACID limited, income constrained, employed, right? One paycheck away from being from being in dire straits. But we raise money for them, and actually the program pays for teaching women financial literacy. But because of what is going on with COVID and everything, we had to take the program virtual. So we needed to create an event that was still going to be engaging, et cetera. So long story short, I was asked to speak in one of the sessions, and I spoke about confidence in the workplace in a new, you know, in a time of COVID and whatnot. And I was getting ready for the session, and I thought, ooh, my makeup looks great, but I need to take it up a notch. So I actually wore my my magnetic eyelashes yesterday. And I was like, I didn't put them on today. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. What's wrong with my eyes? So, but I love the eyelashes. Those are really fun. So I don't know if you've seen those, but.
I have seen them. I've never tried them, but I was on my Instagram feed and I saw the advertisement for it. Does it work well? Like, is it?
Yeah. So I have never been able to use eyelashes, like the glue, and it sort of freaks me out that I'm going to shut my eye closed with the glue. So my friend introduced me to them. I was at another event, another fundraiser for the children's hospital here. And she walked in, I didn't know she was going to be there. And all I could see, she has gorgeous eyes to begin with, blue, beautiful eyes. But all I could see from across the room are her eyes, because her lashes were like a million. And I'm like, what? You look gorgeous. And she really looks stunning, all of her. But and she's like, thank you. Do you like my eyes? I'm like, yes. What is this? So, of course, she told me all about them, and I'll put that in the show notes. But they're really fun. They're called Tory Bell. So, yeah, I'll send you the link, because I like them so much. I said, all right, I'm not going to sell them, because this is not something I want to do, but I'll sign up so I can get them, you know, at a discount. So I do use them or whatever, but I love them. And it's so, if you use eyeliner, you just put the eyeliner on. The eyeliner is the magnetic part. And then you just start bringing the eyelashes closer to your eye. And then all of a sudden they're like, whoop, they go on. That's it.
Wow.
And then you just peel them off, and it doesn't hurt. It doesn't feel like anything. So they're really fun. I love them. So yeah.
And you can reuse them.
Oh yeah. So you can use them for 30 times. And they actually, my friend texted me earlier today. She's like, did you see the new ones that came out for the 4th of July? So they have like a little red, white, and blue here on the tip. And then the tip of the lashes are blue. And I'm like, okay. And then they have all kinds. Now, I don't have the super, you know, they have, what do they call them? Girls Night Out. And I have the 9 to 5, the ones that are, you know, reasonable length, but nothing like look at me. Now, there's some that are very serious. So they're super fun, though. I like them. And I highly recommend them to anyone who wants to wear them and needs a little confidence in the eyes.
I'm gonna get them like after our call, because that sounds amazing.
Yeah, I'll shoot you the link. They're very cute. I love them. So, and my husband's like, I don't understand.
Like, it's a girl thing. You just need it. You know, you just need a little something sometimes. So,
right.
Yeah.
I love it.
So now I'm intrigued about something that you said before, and I want to see a little bit of where did that go? You talked about how your mom was doing some investing as you were growing up, and your dad was, you know, would work 9 to 5 and whatnot. And your mom didn't really talk about it.
Yeah.
So how did you learn some of the things that your mom was doing? And how did your mom sort of bring that to light? And did that have any influence on you and how you handle money?
Oh, definitely. I mean, okay, so growing up, again, my mom was a stay-at-home mom, right? Like, mm-hmm. I didn't see her go to work. And it's very similar to your experience with your, I think your grandmother, you said about mm-hmm. the check and all yep. that stuff. So my dad actually wrote my mom a check every week. Mm-hmm. Again, this is what I saw as a child, right? I didn't know until like when I was older that my mom was trading stock at the time. All I knew was that what I saw as a child was that my dad was the one that was providing for all of us.
Right, right.
Thinking that that's what it was. But I think my mom did that on purpose. Again, she did that on purpose because she was trying to follow our cultural mm-hmm. like norm, which right. is that the man is the breadwinner. Mm-hmm. And I think that she didn't want to take away from him. It was, she right. was afraid that that would make him feel a certain way.
Right.
Right. But you know, and I love my mom, but I think growing up, it impacted me in thinking that that's the way I had to be as well, that I couldn't shine as much as my partner or like my significant other because I'm a woman.
Right.
So now what I want to like share with people like in the world is that I think women need to step up and actually
yes.
be okay with making the amount of money that they make. And it's interesting because it was kind of like a theme in my life, because when I was in Armenia, same thing, right? Like in that culture, it was the men that was bringing home the bacon or like, you know, the finance right. and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And actually when I started teaching women how to be financially empowered, the men in the community were actually really angry mm-hmm. because they didn't want their wife to be like making money. Right.
It makes them independent.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. that's what I'm saying. It was just so interesting because that was such a current theme. And then I actually had to live through that myself in the very beginning of my business. Mm-hmm. And like, even when I was working for someone and it took me a while to really realize that maybe what I'm meant to do right now actually is to empower women to think otherwise, because I struggled so long with that right. belief. Right.
Yep. I think that that's a very important belief. I look back in my life, and I was married before I was married to Dan, my hashtag handsome husband now. But when I was previously married, and the marriage wasn't working out and I knew I needed to leave, I was so afraid that I wasn't going to be able to make ends meet. I was so yeah. afraid that I wasn't going to be able to survive. And how am I going to do it? And there was such fear, right? Like the financial shackles, right, that I had. And when the situation came to a head and it was like, okay, I need to leave. This is not the place for me. Like, all of a sudden sort of the switch went off and I thought, I'm so stupid. Like, I make more money than he does. Of course I can live. Like, of course I can take care of myself. Right. Like, what's wrong? Right. And it was sort of this shift. And here's what I've learned now that I'm in a marriage, that we have a great, open, honest communication. And listen, it's not perfect. Money is a tough value. I think it's a different value for people, right? And how you handle money might be different than how your partner handles money. So there are conversations you have to have. But what I encourage women are is to, and especially the ones that I work with, is have the conversation, communicate your value of or your priorities as well mm-hmm. to your spouse. And your spouse, you can work through that, but never be afraid to be paid or have a job, because it's going to then demean what he's doing, right? And if your partner loves you enough, he will be happy that you are more successful or have more financial means than he does, because when you are together, you're a partnership, right? But I think that for so long, financial constraints have been a way for women to really be kind of trapped and stay in marriages or stay in places that it's not good for them, right?
Oh, 100%. Again, I saw a lot of that when I was living in Armenia. That was the central theme for 3 years of was seeing so many women struggle with that belief that they couldn't make it on their own.
I was reading, was it a reading? Well, I know that there's a woman who went to Africa, and this is maybe 5-10 years ago, and she went to do some missionary work and then found that the girls in this particular school, when they got to high school, would drop out and not go back for further education. And that's because when they didn't have the money, but the family only paid for the education of their sons, not their daughters.
Yeah.
So what she started doing is she started teaching and working with the girls in ways that they started to create financial independence in high school, creating their own business. And she established this factory where girls can actually go and make purses and shoes and all kinds of things. And then they sell it, right? And then they have the ability to be able to then finance their education and continue to move ahead. And for a long time, it was very controversial in the villages, because all of a sudden these women all of a sudden had more of a say in what their life was going to be like, as opposed to their dad saying, no, you have to get married, or no, you have to stay home, or and when they had so much potential. So now, what are some of the things that you see with women that they struggle with, other than, you know, maybe thinking that they're not good enough, or that maybe they need to rely on their husbands? And there's nothing wrong if you are relying on your husband, but how do you create more of a easy conversation with your spouse about money?
I feel like what would be great is kind of understanding what their beliefs about money are first, right? Because I think that when you put two people together, first of all, your beliefs about money might not be the same, right? You grew up very differently. Yep. So when it comes to a relationship, I know with me and my partner, we actually had to talk about what his money story was growing up, and then talked about my money story and kind of see, like, are there differences? And if there are differences, like, what is actually true, right? Because I talk about this actually in my book, that most people have this idea about money and they believe that it's true and that that's really the truth. Yes,
absolutely.
Right. And it's kind of like this Night King belief that this must be true. And because it's true, I'm going to believe every supporting belief that goes with it. But it's about questioning whether that belief is actually even really true. Right. For instance, I think a good example is, let's say, COVID-19, right?
Like,
you know, when we first learned about COVID-19 or the coronavirus, people were freaking out because they were thinking that there was not going to be enough toilet paper or enough supplies. Right. And it was because of that fear that created the action of them, like, overstocking or just trying to, like, you know, prepare.
Hoard, right.
And hoard, exactly. The right word is hoard. And essentially, it's not necessary, because if everyone just took what they needed, there's going to be enough, right? It's just that anxiety or that belief that there isn't enough that is stopping them. So to answer your question, I think that it's first and foremost important for you to talk about what your, like, money beliefs are with your partner.
Right.
And then from there, questioning and challenging whether they're actually really true.
I love that. And I think that in our marriage, and we've been married for 8 years, being able to come to the table and really test some of the thoughts, right? Because, like you said, we tell ourselves stories that we feel are true. And like, I told myself a story, I couldn't take care of myself and go out on my own. And then the same thing with my husband, right? He's like, what do you mean? Like, he'll look at me sometimes like, oh, you're right. That sounded really dumb now that I said it out loud, or as you have a conversation. And for us, the other thing too that has worked really well is really being able to prioritize what are our goals and what is important, and understanding that. So he knows that for me, seeing the world is an important thing, right?
Yeah.
But for him also, and it's important to me as well, right? Having money for retirement and all of that. But we needed to really then, like my dad would say, unify criteria. in what we work towards. So, and now we have a healthy balance of his beliefs, my beliefs, and the beliefs that we know are true and not some sort of perceived story that, that may not hold value. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Everything is a story. Like, everything is literally a story.
Of course. And of course.
And sometimes we are just so trapped in our story mm-hmm. that we actually don't see that we can look at things differently.
Yeah, I tell a lot of my clients, and this is something that my coach, you know, teaches and I learned from her, is I teach a lot of them, just write it out and look at it and then go back and underline the stuff that it's really true. Not the stuff that you think is true. The stuff that, you know, when you tell Judge Judy, like Corinne says, Judge Judy is going to agree with you that that's a fact, that's a circumstance, mm-hmm. and it's not, you know, an opinion. And I think that our world, a lot of times, we've revolved around opinions and not necessarily, you know, the real truth or the real circumstance. So it's important to check that.
It kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you heard of this analogy of that, like your like prominent beliefs are like the tabletop of a table, right? And the reason why it's so strong is because there's these legs that are supporting that belief. Mm-hmm. So in order for you to debunk that belief, it's all about knocking those legs, those supporting right. beliefs down. And so it's about challenging yourself and asking, like, is my belief really true? Like, can I find right. evidence that is contrary to what I actually believe in, right? Because for a good example is, like, I had this limited belief when I wrote my book. It was quite a journey, let me just put it that way. But one of my limited beliefs were, like, I can't be a best-selling author because I'm Asian. Like, I can't believe I had that belief, but it was a belief.
That's a crazy belief, by the way.
I know, but it was a belief because right. I never saw a lot of Asian bestsellers, right?
Right, right.
So I'm like, okay, that's not, like, how can it be possible for me? Like, it was mm-hmm. a limited belief, and I actually had to work through it in order for me to even put this thing out there, right? Like, if I didn't do it, then right. we wouldn't be here today, actually.
I love that. Let me see the cover.
Here it is.
I love it. I saw the picture of it before, but it looks great. Oh my gosh. Yeah, and I love that little, I love the little money butterfly in the front, and we'll post pictures when this airs. So
yes, yes. The butterfly has a very significant meaning, and I talk mm-hmm. about it more in the book.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love it. I think that that's a great analogy. Analogies are great. Analogies are so perfect to be able to illustrate a point. Who inspired you to go in this journey and to do the work that you're doing?
As cliche as this may sound, it's actually the women that I worked with in Armenia. Mm-hmm. That was like the starting point. Mm-hmm. That gave me that initial spark, right?
Right.
After working with them, I came back and I was actually working for a night. I was working at LinkedIn. I was working there for some time. And then I realized, like, what am I doing? It was really just me following that traditional path of what my parents wanted me to. And what inspired me next is actually my mom, because my mom came here when she was 25. She really took a big risk. And I realized that I was very similar to my mom, in which that there's certain people out there that, like, feel like there's like this internal nudge for them to be something different and not follow that path. And that was me, right? Like, and I really struggled with it so hard because I really thought that, like, okay, I can't do what I really want to do. But I think, again, working with those women and my mom, just talking to her, maybe pushed me to that next level. And obviously seeing a lot of, like, women influencers, women coaches really stepping into their power creates that possibility for other people, especially me, to also go into this industry.
I am taken back, and I shouldn't be, because I really do know this, right? In working in leadership programs with women and knowing the stats and working in education, I know that women don't see themselves in technology, so we don't have a lot of women in technology. Girls don't see themselves in the sciences because, you know, there's not a lot of engineers. Like, my husband works for a research center, and there's not a lot of women there. But I think that you're right. So many women are living this belief that I can't do that because I've never seen it. And mm-hmm. there isn't someone that I can emulate. And I think it's so important that one, we create more examples and more mentors so that other women start to see themselves in the places that they want to be. But for the woman who doesn't see who they want to be out there already and someone that they can be like, step out. You are going to be that person for somebody else. And yes. there's going to be fear involved. There's going to be second guessing yourself. But the journey is so worth it because there's so many great lessons that come of it. And I think that that's fabulous that you decided to take a step and go ahead.
Well, what you just said literally just gave me chills because I didn't realize like how my book impacted so many of my fellow like Asian Americans because, you know, I shared a lot about my story growing up in this book and how I viewed about money and all that stuff. And when, you know, a lot of my Asian entrepreneurs were like reading this or just like minorities in general, they were like, oh my gosh, like I wish that I read this book sooner, or I wish someone like stepped up and like, because the thing is that like, I didn't see a lot of that. Right. And exactly what you're saying, that if you don't know like who you might inspire, right. If you're going to like stay in your shadow, if you don't, even if you feel like it's your calling,
right.
You're literally doing the world a disservice because, you know, if I didn't put this book out there, I wouldn't have not known that I could impact people in those ways.
Right. And for instance, I know that, you know, I look back at the life of my grandmother, right? Here's someone who grew up in a very affluent home. Her father had a lot of prestige. She came from Spain to El Salvador, was recognized, you know, in different circles internationally. And she had a desire to teach and to impact lives. And she also had a desire to see the world. And she worked and, you know, she went to school to be a teacher. She was told, no, stay home, find a husband. No, I don't want to do that. I want to teach. I want to. And eventually she kept pushing the boundaries to get to the place that she wanted to be in. And eventually she reached the career that she wanted. Right. And her taking that step when it wasn't in vogue, right, to be a career woman in the 30s, to travel and to do your own thing or be independent of your husband after she did meet my grandfather. And she was older. She was 39 when she met him. That's an old maid in those days, right? And the fact that she continued to be strong and independent and she would defer to him because she wanted to be supportive and loving of him, and she would defer to him, but she would go toe to toe. And for me, seeing that as a child really impacted me in a way that I know that I could be independent. I could choose whatever path I wanted to. And I think that that's important. And you are living a life now that somebody else is watching, and you shouldn't be living it just to comply with somebody else's standards for you, but you should live it because it feels good for you and know that the good that you're doing for yourself is going to then impact somebody else and it's going to inspire somebody else. So,
100%. I love that story. Thank you for sharing.
Oh, well, thank you. But, you know, again, I can't wait to read your book because I think that I love listening to different stories and different cultural views of the world, because although we're one world, mm-hmm. and for the most part, we love the same, we live the same, but there are certain nuances, right? That the more that we learn about each other, the richer we are and the 100%. Better that we can understand and support each other.
So. And I love that you say that because I feel like, I love that you use the word rich, right? Because there's this one quote where like travel, what is it? The one thing that makes you more richer is travel. There's a quote out there. I don't know if you've seen it. But it reminds me of what you said, because when you're traveling, you get to experience different cultures and like, you know, what they're about and really stepping into their shoes, right? That whole idea mm-hmm. again. Because when you're just yep. like staying in one place, you can't see much, right? You only see the world through your eyes.
Right.
But when you can start seeing the world through other people's eyes, mm-hmm. then you can start to like awaken something in you that might not even be there before.
Yeah. So I actually, it's funny you mentioned travel. And again, I'm a traveler. I love traveling and I'm breaking out in hives because I haven't been on an airplane in a long time. But I actually found a show on Netflix last night. And again, I don't watch a lot of television, but my husband's like, okay, your turn to pick a show. So I found the show. The guy, his name is Phil. I don't remember his last name. He is the writer or the creator of Everybody Loves Raymond. He was a co-creator. Okay. And he basically travels around the world. And the first episode that I watch is the episode where he travels to Morocco. And he was in Marrakesh. And he basically goes and eats all the food. And he...
Wow.
And again, there's a lot of travel shows that show you the restaurants and eat the food, whatever, and the locals. But he... I've been to the Middle East. I've been to Jordan, Israel, and... I haven't been to Morocco yet. It's on my list. In one of the segments, he actually traveled to a family that is in the outskirts of Marrakesh, and they live in the mountains. And he talks about, like, you see the sheep, and then they talk about, like, the woman is making couscous, and he's interviewing and interacting with the family. Now, they go and have dinner, and it's in their home, and it's a very, you know, a modest home. They're in the roof, on the roof of the house, but the view is of all of the mountains. And then he starts talking about how this family has been here for hundreds and thousands of years, and how the people in that village have been thousands of years that you can't even like fathom that, right? And how these people have been having dinner with this beautiful view of the mountains around them. And wow. Then they bring the food. And I don't know if you're familiar, and I guess I sort of knew this, but not really. And they serve, it's couscous and vegetables and chicken, and they have this long table for the family. And then the husband, the head of the household, the man says, you know, if you don't mind, excuses, but we have to all come together to one table. And they take one of the tables away, and then the whole family comes in this small table, and everybody has a fork, and they eat from the same place. And it was that cultural sensitivity that they are sharing one meal together. And he was like, these people are opening up their home and giving me the best of everything, and they're allowing me to be part of something that is not only just a meal, but it's intimate of an experience by eating from the same plate, right? And it was so interesting that, and then I thought, like, we sometimes when we travel and when we're in another country, oh, we go and we may try something not too exotic or whatnot, but are we really taking the time to find out about, well, what does it mean? Why is it that they eat this? And what led this civilization or town, or why is it that this is their food, and where does that come from? And I just love that. And I was so transported, and Marrakesh and Morocco are definitely on my list now. They're moving up on the list, and because I love experiencing that. And I love just understanding that, you know, if you went to a Moroccan restaurant here and they brought you a big plate, would you understand the background of that? And would you, or would you be like, oh, I don't want that, or whatever, right?
Right.
So traveling opens, it expands your mind for sure.
Oh, yes.
No, I love it. I love it.
I can't live without it. I live to travel, right?
I know. I can't wait to go somewhere. I was thinking, it's such a beautiful day in Connecticut. I don't know if it's just, well, you're in California. You're in Northern California?
or Southern California.
You know, you're okay. Because you were in LinkedIn, right? Before, so you were in
San Francisco. I was. Yeah.
Okay. That's why I was thinking that. It's so beautiful here today, and it was terrible yesterday. So I tempted to go and put dip my toes in the water. So I'm going to have to see if I can convince my husband to put off some housework. And we need to go and do a little bit of that.
Well, it's the weekend, so why not?
Well, he's working on a project that it really is. So we had a leak in our porch, and the leak, we didn't realize it on time. So then there was a hole, and then the birds came in, and it's a three-season porch. So we had not noticed that because it was wintertime, but now we needed to repair it. So he actually took off the roof of the porch, and he's been replacing the roof. So it needs to be replaced, and it needs to be done before it rains, and you know, everything in there is ruined. So it's going to be my new yoga / morning meditation room. So
I love that. I'm all about the meditation rooms and like having that sacred space to do that.
I've been running a group for some women. I realized that I had not been as mindful and as consistent in my meditation practice every morning. And I've been getting into the rut of just like, okay, let me take 2 minutes and then like move on and not really sit and create space for myself. So I put out the call and I said, hey, does anybody, you know, from this group that I belong to? And I said, does anybody want to like participate, because I'm a certified yoga teacher and I got certification in mindfulness and all that and can walk people through meditation and mindfulness, but I didn't want to do it alone because I knew that having other people was going to, you know, create that space for me to really be ready and do it. So I 6:30 a.m. I've been doing this. So it's been going great and I love it. And I can't wait to move to my new space for just my morning tea or coffee and whatnot. So I can't wait.
That's amazing. I mean, I do the same thing. I have a morning routine, and whenever I like rush into things, if I don't do my morning routine or I don't meditate, I'm so flustered throughout the day. I don't feel myself. I don't feel grounded. So I definitely agree that that sacred space is so important.
Kristen, do you have an evening routine too?
I do, actually.
What is your evening routine?
So it's a little bit shorter. I actually have like a shutdown routine and then like an evening routine.
Okay.
So my shutdown routine is that at the end of the day, I actually clear my entire desktop. So when I'm working, I'm that type of like creative mess type of person where like my whole entire desktop is like littered with stuff. So in order for me to feel sane, I have to clean it out at the end of the day.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So I do that, and then obviously I check my emails for about 15 to 20 minutes, and then I respond to my clients. So there's like a ritual that I do there, and then I, you know, obviously step away from the computer, and then I actually do like my cooking with my partner. That's like our quality time together. But in the evening before I go to bed, most nights what I like to do is actually read a book, and then I also listen to hypnosis while I go to bed. I feel like your subconscious mind is obviously the most alive when you're sleeping. So I want to definitely prime that, but I think it's important for me to actually settle down before I go to bed, because if I don't, I tend to kind of like, I don't know if it's just a me thing, but the next morning then I feel flustered again. So there's like that structure.
I agree. I have an evening routine as well, and it changes a little bit with the seasons. Like at night during fall and winter, I make a tea for the evening before I go to bed, and then I go upstairs while the tea is cooling off. I wash my face, and then I I come into the bedroom, moisturize, I take my vitamins for the evening, and then drink my tea while I read a chapter. It's funny how when COVID started, the time switched, right? And so I haven't been making my evening tea, and I feel sort of like off, like something is not working. But so I need to maybe just drink water or do something different, I think, to create that. So I have a question. A question that doesn't relate to anything that we've been talking about, but it just occurred to me. Okay. So my porch, because I have to bring it back to me, I'm sorry. My porch faces east. So
Okay. And then our house faces south. So it's southeast, and it's all windows and three sides. So I have a little love seat. Should it face east or should it face? So because if it faces east, it will be in the only wall that has no windows. Or
okay.
What do you think? Maybe so I need to send you pictures.
Yeah, to be honest with you, it's really hard for me to do a consult like this, like because I just can't see anything. But it also depends on your house. So the type of feng shui that I do actually calculates the time that your house was built.
Okay.
Also, like the facing directions and all that stuff. And so, again, like I would have to ask you a bunch of questions.
Okay.
So
this may be more intensive. All right. I know that the one thing I did when we got married. I wanted to move because we live in a town that's a little smaller, but and then our house, because it faces south, our steps to the are right in front of the door, and I didn't want to have the steps there. And my husband's like, "What? I don't understand. I've lived in this house for so long." I said, "All right, well then we have to paint the door red, and I will feel a little better." And he thought it was crazy, honestly, but yeah. So I've been trying to figure out how I'm going to reposition the stuff in the room to make it a very sanctuary for just a peaceful practice and just a peaceful room where I can really thrive. So
Send me pictures. Yeah. That's the only way I could actually really visualize.
Okay. All right. Okay. But I'm not sending pictures of what it looks like now because it looks like it's like a Sanford and Son like storage room right now. So yeah. That's not happening. Now, you're limited by how much you can get out in California right now to promote the book. What are you doing to promote the book?
So we're doing a lot of podcast interviews. So I'm doing a lot of podcast interviews like this, obviously. But honestly, it's been really great. The marketing strategy that I did was I formed a launch squad, like a launch team.
Love it.
So really like drove the momentum of the book up. So right now, if you look on Amazon, we are number one bestseller. And so I think we stayed up there because of the momentum of how I initially pushed it. So I think with the algorithm and with Amazon, once you're a bestseller, it starts to show you into like new eyes. So we've been doing that. And then we're looking into running some advertisement. But primarily because of COVID, like obviously I would love to do book signings and events.
Right.
But right now it's a lot of like virtual stuff.
I love it. I'm gonna put the link, and I'll do that even before the episode airs. I'll put the link to the book on the website, and then I'll throw a promo out there as well, so that and I can't wait to review it. I forgot. I wanted to. It's in my cart, and I have to go back and get it. I'm sorry, but
no, it's okay.
It's part of what I wanted to have read, but I seem to be behind in the books and what I'm reading between what I'm reading and what I'm listening to. Right? There's so much content out there. Are you a reader?
I am a reader. I'm also a listener, and that's also why in the book I included everybody. So if you buy the book, you actually receive the audiobook for free.
Oh, that's awesome.
I throw that in there. And then I also included like some interactive exercises. I'm someone that is not just, I don't know, I really like to take action. I believe.
I love it.
You know, when you're in the law of attraction space or the spirituality space, it's really hard to take action. It's very woo-woo or inspirational, which is great. But in the book, it's very interactive as well. So to answer your question, I'm both. Like I like to read a book at the end of the day, right, before I go to sleep. But then throughout the like when I'm cooking or like if I'm by myself, like or I'm driving, I like to listen, right? That's also why podcasts or like audiobooks are great too.
What's one book that you feel that after they read yours, people should read?
Oh, that's a good question. I was going to say, read mine.
They need to read yours first. But once they finish, what would be another one that you feel that people could benefit from?
That's a good question. One of my favorite books is called If How-To's Were Enough, We Would All Be Rich, Skinny, and Successful. That's one of my favorite books. It's a very short read. I would say it's like 100 pages. It's by Brian Clemmer. But that was actually the book that really changed my life in my early 20s, because that was when I was starting to get into personal development. That's also when I was becoming a coach in a foreign country. And that book really helped me change the idea of it's not about the how-tos, because again, the title is If How-Tos Were Enough, We Would All Be Rich, Skinny, successful, right?
Ooh, I'm going to have to check it out because I know that how-tos are not enough.
Yeah.
So exactly. I love it.
If it was, then we would all be rich, skinny, and successful.
Of course. Of course. Well, I think that a success and richness is all for us as long as we're open to it. And we believe that, you know, there's enough for us there. So I love that. I, you know, time goes by so fast and I could talk to you for another hour, but I know that you probably had have a busy day. It's Friday. And if you're anything like me, you're trying to accomplish things so that the weekend is all yours, right?
Yeah, actually I have, this is my podcast days. I schedule my podcast today. So
I think that's perfect. That's awesome. Good.
Try to batch everything together. So
me
that's
too.
What I'm up to.
Me too. Batching is the answer to a lot of things. If people batched more, then we would be more productive for sure, right?
100%. I totally agree.
Well, I'm going to put all of the links in the show notes to all of your socials, to the book. The book will go in my website today. I'll work on that because I do have some stuff I have to fix on there. And I love talking to you. I know that you are one of those fun friends I will always have online, and hopefully we'll get to meet in person when I can come to California or you come to the East Coast.
Yes.
If you're coming to the East Coast, if you're coming to New York, and I can always meet you in New York. New York is just a hop, skip, and a jump away, and I love it.
Oh, I'll definitely think of you when I come to New York.
Yeah, sure. We'll have to go do something fun in the city for sure. And thank you for coming to Casa de Confidence. Thank you for giving the love and support and the tools for women to be successful and to go out there and be able to learn how to be more open to the abundance that there is when it comes to money, to helping them grow and become better versions of themselves, and leading the way and shining an example, because you are doing some wonderful thing, Kristen, and I'm so proud of you.
Thank you so much, Julie. It was a pleasure being here. Thank you. I feel so
absolutely
honored. It was so fun chatting with you. All things eyelashes and confidence and all that.
Yes,
stuff,
I got to send you the info on the eyelashes because you're going to love them.
Please,
you're going to love it. All right. I'll talk to you soon. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks, Julie.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that interview was hella cool.
Oh, what is this? SpongeBob?
It's Cartman.
From?
South Park.
Oh.
Don't you know your animation?
Well, I certainly know more animation because of you.
I know.
I mean, I like animation.
I'm like your animation superhero.
Don't go that far. Come on. Anyway, what did you think of the interview, Daniel Collins?
Did you say Smurfs?
I did say Smurfs.
Name five Smurfs.
Sleepy Smurf, Grouchy Smurf, Papa Smurf, Smurfette, Cookie Smurf.
Cookie Smurf?
The one that cooks.
Yes, you don't know his name,
and
though.
And then Dopey Smurf.
Dopey's a dwarf. Hmm. Wrong franchise.
Dopey. Happy Smurf. Okay, wait a minute. Gargamel is the guy. And what's
the cat's name? You name the cat, I'll let you off the hook.
Hold on. It's not Abracadabra or Lucifer, is it?
Wow, it's kind of like Abracadabra. Yeah, kind of.
Oh, is this a trivia?
Name the artist who created the Smurfs instead.
No.
That's the easy one. No. It's on the feet of all the keychains back in the day before the cartoon came out.
Really? I don't know. Just get me off the hook.
The cat's name is Azrael.
Azrael.
And the creator of the Smurfs' last name is Peyo.
Who knew that? Nobody knew that.
I did.
Well, this is not the show that is filling the demographic of big, tall nerd.
Ooh, you're Amazon the one, truck. You are the one that brought up the Smurfs.
What do you think Amazon is delivering?
Wow. Bright and shiny.
Attention,
Julie, go
deficit.
Get it.
Go get it. Oh. Anyway.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was another great interview.
That was a fantastic interview, and I really, really liked Kristen, and we had such a fun time just chatting. And yes, she could not give me any advice when it came to feng shui because she has to see my house.
Mm.
And, well, I think I know enough that I've read enough. You know, I got all my information on feng shui, the proper channels, HGTV.
So if you think you are in a period of your life where Kristen can help you, look her up. She's in Money Masters Facebook groups. Look for Kristen Noel on YouTube. And
I like her YouTube channel.
We'll post the
links. We'll post the links, and I'll tell you, her YouTube channel is pretty cool. I like it.
And if you're a CASA insider, you'll get those links in your inbox.
Yes, you will. And by the way, if you are a CASA insider and you have not given us a review, please do so. We would love a review from somebody.
That would be great.
Yeah, it helps us rank in the podcast world.
And we know how we're doing.
And we really want to make sure that we're bringing you content that you love and admire and love to share with other people.
And make sure to tell us if you like Julie's husband or not.
Yeah, make sure you tell us that.
Yeah, because he's a little needy right now.
He is a little needy right now.
So this week marked a week in my life. It's been 10 years.
Wow.
10 years.
10 years.
10 years. I'd like to Spock. I would like to talk about a special woman in my life.
She was a special woman.
Yeah. So 10 years ago, just the other day, my mom passed away. And she lived a long, full life, but I still miss her. So my mom was 47 when I was born. So that's already a unique situation in the family.
You had a very special relationship with her because you were the last one
at home with her. It was almost like being an only child. So my mom's in the hospital giving birth to me, and my brother shows up, and they think he's the father because he's almost 30.
They should have been a cougar.
Excuse me? It's my brother. It's my mom. Oh, you weirdo. Oh, she's a weirdo. Anyway,
I loved your mom.
So I know.
Your mom and I, so we've been married 8 years, but your mom and I met each other under previous circumstances that perhaps someday we'll talk about. But so I used to email with your mom. She used to send me jokes. I was on my old Yahoo account, and I came across a couple of her emails, and she was funny. We talked about I used to travel a lot, and I would see her from time to time, and we had one thing in common that we have you in common, obviously, but we love lobster. I don't understand how you don't like lobster. By the way, I was left with the taste of wanting more lobster last week.
Oh, yeah.
You gypped me out of getting a lobster.
Well, maybe you can get some more lobster this week and celebrate my mom with it.
I think we should go find the lobster truck and go celebrate your mom. What do you think?
Maybe we'll just do that. Maybe that's what we'll do with her afternoon.
Yeah. Anyway. I'm so grateful for your mom.
So, yeah, me too.
She made you a good boy.
We were a team. You know, my dad passed away when I was young, so it was me and my mom together for most of my youth. I had one sister who lived in the house for, you know,
short period of time.
Until I was 10, I think. So
she was out after that.
But the thing is, the year my mom passed away, we got to take a trip. We took a road trip to Washington, D.C. Well, we went to Amish country first. We went to Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I said it right.
Lancaster. I don't know how to say that.
Lancaster. Mm-hmm. It's not Lancaster. It's Lancaster.
Lancaster.
To the locals. You learn that if you go there and you say it wrong. They correct you.
They correct you.
And so we spent a day in Amish country. And then we went to D.C. We walked around Arlington Cemetery. It was great experience. She had a wheelchair and just pushed her on Arlington Cemetery. Then we went to museum.
You went to the museum, and
the
then
American History Museum, where my mom loved seeing all the first ladies' dresses. That was like the thing she loved the
most.
And
we did that 2 years ago too ourselves.
Yes. So And then after that, we went to, where did we go? The
Oriole Park.
No. We went and saw, and my mom is a dyed-in-the-wool Red Sox fan. And
dyed-in-the-wool? What is that?
And she actually got to see them win in 2004. And that was incredible. After how many years? We went to the, what is the Catholic, the...
You went to the National Shrine.
The National Shrine. And in the National Shrine, if you go in the basement, there's actually a monument dedicated to Babe Ruth. So, and as we all know, Babe Ruth was a Red Sox. Then he was a Yankee. And she thought that was the coolest thing, seeing that.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I ever saw her, like, say something nice about a Yankee before.
Wow.
Except for Wade Boggs. He was a Yankee, but she loved Wade Boggs when he was with the Red Sox.
Okay. And
she forgave him. She did not forgive Johnny Damon for leaving. But
you
whatever.
Realize her audience may not be a Yankee or a Red
anyway,
Sox.
Anyway, but my mom was, and she's listening.
Oh, look at you.
Because I'm sure my mom would be proud of what you're doing.
Your mom,
proud of what we're doing, and she would love to listen to the show. Hey, she might or might not stick with it, but she would she would love that we're doing it, and she'd be impressed by us.
Your mom is a sticker.
Oh my God! I wish we could have had her as a guest on the show.
She would have been great on the show.
Oh, that would be
Danny.
Perfect.
Maybe we need to have your sisters.
I know. That'd be a good idea.
Donna, are you listening? Get ready. We're coming for you as a guest.
Kathleen, maybe.
Kathleen, come on.
Come on the show. All right.
The Collins sisters.
Anyway.
You know, if we have your sisters, we're going to have mine.
So the last part of that little trip, we came up on our way home, and we stopped at Orioles Stadium.
Park.
Baltimore's Park. Yeah, Orioles Park.
Camden Yards. Camden Yards.
And we watched a game there. Unfortunately, it wasn't the Red Sox. But we watched Orioles. We got a tour of the park. And her favorite part of that tour was seeing the visitors' press box. Because she knows that's where Jerry Remy sat. And Jerry Remy is one of the announcers for the Red Sox. And he played for the Red Sox years ago. And I'm like, Mom, that's where Jerry sits. She's like, oh, my God, that's awesome. One of the results of that day at the park is a picture that is famous in my family of her sitting in the park with her hat on. Yeah. And it's a really good picture of her.
You know what that picture symbolizes to me? And I think that I want to highlight this for all women. And I think that you have a dream in your heart of doing something. And Dan's mom and I actually also went on a trip together. Dan and I were not married. We were married to our practices. But I saw this look in her eye when she was on the plane and she got to go to Nashville. I got to go to Nashville with her and we went to the Country Music Hall of Fame. And the look that someone gets in their eye when they accomplish something that they've dreamed of and complete something off their bucket list.
Like the Grand Ole Opry.
Like the Grand Ole Opry. It's an amazing look. And we're going to post the picture because for those of you who are sitting on the sidelines who are thinking, I have a dream. I want to do whatever it is. Don't ever think that it's not possible. Dreams can be accomplished. And sometimes it's just as simple as visiting a baseball park or spending time with your son or just being in the car. And
you know what the thing was that whole trip? She's just like, I'll do what you want to do. I'll do what you want to do. And we went on. It's funny. On one of the days, I met up with a friend. And this is a...
funny story.
I won't out my friend, but I met up with my friend and this is in a time where I was separated from my first wife.
He was single and ready to mingle.
I was single, whatever. And we met her, me and my mom, we went out to dinner together. And afterwards, my mom chuckled. She goes, I've never been on a date with my son before.
Wow. But again,
not what it was, but there was, you know.
Here's the thing, though, that I want to just highlight, because I think that your mom is a perfect example of this. Here, many of you as women are devoted moms and wives and grandmothers and mm-hmm. great-grandmothers, and it's never too late to find your passion, find your purpose, and go out confidently for it.
So, and remember, it's never too late, but don't wait too long. Mm. I know my mom wanted to go on that trip. She wanted to fly again, but she wasn't allowed. So we went on that trip, and 2 months later, she was gone.
Yeah.
So, and I think she knew. Mm. We always say that. Oh, I think they knew. Blah, blah, blah. I think she knew more than she was letting on. But don't wait too long to do mm-hmm. the things that have meaning. We go on week by week, weekend to weekend sometimes.
Right.
Where the week is just the prelude to the weekend, and the weekend is just the prelude to going back to work and rinse.
And repeat.
Repeat. Blah, blah, blah. Do something that means something. You know,
and the little things mean a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for joining me, and thank you for sharing your wonderful memories of an amazing woman who mm-hmm. I will forever be grateful for giving me such a wonderful son.
So
I don't have a son. He is my husband, her son. Just clarifying.
And I thank God that the world saw Cecilia Constance Demers Collins. Mm. Maiden name was Demers, Sil Collins, that she was part of this world and part of my life and gave me life.
And we are all better for it because she raised amazing children.
I am pretty amazing.
I'm talking about your siblings too, dude.
Oh, you're just talking about my siblings?
I'm talking about all of the Collins kids. Anyway, go confidently, my friends. And thank you for joining us today in this episode of the podcast.
All right. Have a great week.
Peace out.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Casa de Confidence podcast with Julie DeLuca Collins. Remember to check her out on Instagram and Facebook, and always click subscribe to catch every new episode. Remember, leave a review so we can continue to bring you fresh content. And as always, go confidently in the direction of your dreams.
Hi, everybody. I know that sometimes we get very lonely in this entrepreneur journey, and I want to invite you to join us into our limited time only Purposeful You Mastermind. For many of us entrepreneurs, we believe that we can do it all, but the reality is that doing it alone only creates a lot of overwhelm. So join us at the Purposeful You Mastermind. You can find out more information by going to bit.ly/Julie's Mastermind. This is going to be the place where you are able to then unlock your full potential and achieve long-term success for your business, push you behind your current limits, expand your connections, discover new ideas, and implement them with confidence. You're going to get the support in all aspects and transforming you to the six-figure business you've been looking for. Pause and get off the hamster wheel if you've been spinning around. This is a time where you can get that support from like-minded entrepreneurs that are here to join you in your journey. Together, we can challenge the assumptions and land the speaking engagements and opportunities we want to grow our business and make an impact in the lives of people. See you then.
Remember, you can find the mastermind at bit.ly, Julie's Mastermind.